Blog Talk Radio.
Should have left it on, maybe. Hey, welcome to the HR Happy Hour. This is Steve Bowes. With me, of course, the HR minion, Shauna Markey. Shauna, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good.
That's great. This is episode 35, The Leadership Show, February 4th, 2010. We're excited for tonight's show. We've got a couple of great guests, a great topic. We're pretty pleased. It's good to be back, Shauna. I missed last week's show.
Yes, we missed you.
Did you really? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. I heard the show went great, you know.
Well, I was very nervous.
Yeah? Well, no, you did a great job. I thought it went really well. The parts I was able to listen to on that snowy train I was on last Thursday night. I want to thank you for running the show. And, of course, thanks again to the Fistful of Talent crew who took over the reins a little bit last week, Tim Sackett and Jessica Lee especially. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate that. So, so we're back. I feel good. It's good to be back. Good to be back on the show. I do want to, before we get into the show, a couple of quick announcements. First off, the call-in number for the show is area code 646-378-1086. We hope to take a few calls tonight for sure. So if you call in and want to jump in onto the conversation, once we get going, go ahead and press 1 on your phone once you get connected, and we'll know that you want to come on the air and ask a question or leave a comment. If you just want to hang out and listen, that's great too. Folks on Twitter, we have a hashtag, of course, HR Happy Hour, and Shauna and I will try to keep an eye on the tweets, and if you have any questions or comments there, we'll try to bring those up as well. And the other thing, before we introduce our guests who are patiently waiting, I wanted to mention, so we don't run out of time at the end of the show, is the HR Evolution event 2010 was announced this week, earlier in the week. The tickets have gone on sale, and so you can check those out if you're interested in the HR Evolution in Chicago. The website is hrevolution2010.com, and the tickets, if you're interested in going, is hrevolution2010.eventbrite.com, and maybe we'll Sean or I or someone can tweet out that those links on the HR Happy Hour hashtag. Tickets are going pretty fast. They're almost about halfway sold already, so I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that before we got into the show, because you know how we get, Sean, at the end of the show, run out of time.
Right, and HR Evolution is awesome.
Sean, you'll be there, of course, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not missing it.
So a lot of great people are going to be there, a lot of great great sessions, great topics, and just going to be a great time in Chicago in May. So check that out. All right, so let's get to it. Let's get to the leadership show. We have two great guests here that have agreed to join us tonight, and I want to introduce them right now. Our first guest I'd like to welcome to the show is Jennifer V. Miller. Jennifer, how are you tonight?
I'm well, and thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Jennifer, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and what you're all about.
Well, I know that many of the folks who are calling in tonight are seasoned HR folks, So I'd like to frame my comments that way. For those of you who are on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at Jennifer, V like Victor, Miller. And I have a background in HR. I started my career almost 20 years ago.
We won't hold that against you.
Oh, thank you. That I have a background in HR, and that I started my career more than 20 years ago.
Oh, my.
But I did want to say that, you know, my background started as an HR generalist. So I've done all that sort of payroll thing and employee relation conversations and all those really great, exciting sorts of things very early in my career. And then I switched over to training and development. And that's really where the majority of my professional experience has been, primarily in the corporate world as a training and development specialist, a curriculum designer. I've worked for Marshall Field & Company, which was a department store retailer out of Chicago. I've worked for an insurance company named Foremost and for Herman Miller, who is an office furniture manufacturer based in West Michigan. So I've done the gig for about 10 to 12 years for corporate America, and then for the last 15 years, I have been taking those skills that I learned in corporate America around the HR and training and organizational development realm, and applying them and helping consult to small, medium, and large-sized businesses in the area of leadership development. So I'm really pleased to hear you want to hear what I have to say. And I also,
great. Well,
I was going to say, I also took the liberty of inviting our other guest.
Yes, you did. I'll just bring her on right now. Jennifer did invite our next guest to the show tonight. I'm not sure she completely knows what she's getting into, what she agreed to, but she's hanging in with us anyway. Our next guest is Amanda Wendling. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I am afraid, very, very afraid.
Well, that's
no,
good.
Actually,
that's good. That'll keep
really
you on edge. And that's fine.
Keep me on my toes. Thrilled to be with the group. My experience and knowledge doesn't go nearly as deep as Jennifer's. I know just enough to be dangerous about HR, did some payroll for about 2 years. But primarily the last 9 years, I have to kind of go undercover a little bit here. I work for a major financial services organization in
major
learning and development.
Ooh,
yeah,
right,
huge,
right.
Top three. Learning and development is my focus. Core and leadership, really my focus. Competencies or skills within that. I've been doing that about 9 years, primarily focusing individually on leadership and fully ensconced in programs that I administer and help develop and continue to work on and continue to hone as we move forward. And looking forward to developing a new program around some leadership competencies that they've just rolled out in our larger organization. So.
Cool. Great.
Good.
Well, Amanda, thanks so much for joining in, sort of, you know, really unprepared and not really knowing too much about what's going on here on the show. So, Shauna, I got to tell you, our guests sound sort of prepared and smart, you know, which is,
really?
I think, unusual for this show, you know. And,
stop.
Yeah, so we'll have to bear that in mind as we get into it. So, again, the call-in number is 646-378-1086. There's already 10 or so people hanging out on the line. If anybody who's hanging out on the line wants to actually come on, make a comment, or say have a question, go ahead and press 1 on your handset, and we'll go ahead and get as many of you guys on as we can. If you just want to hang out and listen, that's great as well. So, all right, let's get into the leadership topic, and I'll just throw this one out, I guess, to Jennifer, first of all. I mean, it seems to me that you know, you can't swing a cat around the internet without hitting a leadership block, right, or a white paper, or, you know, I mean, it's tremendous, right, tremendous amount of focus on leadership development. Organizations that we talk to, that my organization talks to all the time, they're constantly stressing the need to develop more leaders and have better leadership development programs. And I just want to know, like, why is this the case? Why is leadership development so important today in organizations today? Why so much emphasis on it?
This is Jennifer commenting, because Steve told Amanda and I at the top of the show that our voices sound a lot alike. Steve, here's,
except for me.
Here's,
yeah.
Exactly. Here's what I would say. I would say why the emphasis, because we're dealing with the most sophisticated technology of all, and that is the human being. It's try as we might to hone it into this science, there's still that indescribable beauty that is the human being that makes it always sort of a moving target. So I think it's a topic that's going to be with us as long as we're walking on the face of the earth.
Absolutely agree.
Amanda, do you have a comment on that? Why, when your organization, you're working, you're developing leadership programs right now, why is it so important for what you're doing?
Well, for us, it's a matter of common focus and common strategy. You know, if you just allow leaders to just solely focus on what they think is important, they may not be headed down the right trail, headed down the right path. Everything has to be streamlined. Everything has to be lean process, if you will. And in order for all of us to be heading down the same direction, we should have some common goals, common strategy. And I think if you start to talk leadership and start to talk about what's the expectation of leadership in this particular organization, if you're talking specifically your own, I think you start to get every leader on board headed the same direction.
Is this a new thing? I mean, or is it always been this way? You know, Jennifer, is this like a relatively modern, you know, problem that organizations are facing, or has it been like this for 10 or 15 or 20 years?
Oh, I don't think it's particularly modern. I think what's different is it's leaders are continually exploring the way to engage employees, but always within the ever-shifting context of their business situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether it's competition or emerging trends or hot products, or, you know, of course, the shrinking of the communication cycle with social media, there's always a new context. So I think that effective leadership has always been something that any organization needs. And, of course, Amanda and I come out of the corporate world, but when I say organization, I mean any group of individuals working together for that common purpose that Amanda was talking about. So whether you're a not-for-profit, a government agency, a school system, you've hopefully got some common ground and some common goals, and there needs to be effective leadership to help steer that ship.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is it more difficult today then? I mean, you know, the economic factors, you know, workforce reductions in force, increased competition, globalization, are those things conspiring to make sort of the identification of leaders and leadership development more challenging than it used to be?
Steve, this is Amanda. I think it absolutely is more difficult. You know, you mentioned the words that were swirling in my head, which is leaner workforce, tighter budgets. You know, we are faced almost every day in my environment where people are looking for places to cut budgets, and when salaries are at a certain amount, there's very little discretionary spending, and the first thing that goes is training budget.
Yeah,
it's
we feel
leadership
that,
programs.
Amanda, you know, as an aside, Amanda, we feel that here right on the HR Happy Hour show. We're cutting budgets as we speak.
Absolutely.
We are?
You're not paying Shauna anymore?
I'm
you're not cutting me?
I might move to domestic beer. I might.
Does that mean no intern?
Yeah.
No pool boy.
That was an option.
All right. So I'm kidding. See, now Amanda's really thinking, really regretting the decision.
No,
you know.
No, I'm reinforcing the positive decision. Actually,
her quote unquote friend Jennifer hooked her up with this. This.
All right.
So budgets are shrinking. Organizations are leaner. But, you know, to me, it's the leadership question. I don't know. Sometimes I think, like, do we need so many leaders? Is it because, like, I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this. I know I already got in trouble for the swinging cat remark already tonight. But
I saw.
I'll use another animal analogy. Is it that the workforce is just, like, just incapable of sort of leading themselves? You know what I mean? Like, are they a bunch of sheep that we just need, that leadership is so critical? You know what I'm, I don't know if I'm even asking this the right way.
This is Jen. Can I take a stab at that?
Yeah, if you even understood that question, yeah, please.
Well, here's what I would say. There's two parts. The first part of your question was, why is it so important, and is it difficult, let's say I was talking context, so is it more difficult today in tough economic times? And what I would say to address that portion of your question is, you know, the gravy train or boom tides times hide a multitude of sins. You know, mm-hmm. you can if when
oh.
things are going when things are going really, really well, you don't the poor leadership, among many other things, sort of gets a little bit hidden. But you know what Amanda is talking about in a very real sense in her own corporate experience, you know, the tightening budgets and things like that, that's when leadership becomes even more important, because you can't hide behind extensive revenue streams and you know, the hottest new product that, you know, just people are begging for and all that sort of thing. So I think in a very practical sense, there are some very real things that are happening that can't be disguised. Now, to your second point about you're sort of wondering about the workforce, do we need so many more leaders, or is it because the workforce needs to be led? And to that, I would offer to you and everybody, you know, listening tonight, the thought of broadening what leadership means. You know, I'm sort of speaking in kind of esoteric terms here, but I think it's a really valid point. Because, you know, you're going to be, you know, we might be talking about some other more specific ways to how to develop leaders in a few minutes. And I would ask all the listeners tonight to think about, when you think about leadership, what's in your mind about that? Is it just the person who has the title, just the people who write the performance reviews? Or are there other ways to demonstrate leadership? And if we broaden our thinking about what that is, sometimes leadership is just one individual stepping up about something they really think is important and saying, you know what, I'm going to handle that today. I'll step up to that, whether or not
right.
they have
so leadership is more than just the leader up at the top of the organizational chart, sort of.
Oh, totally.
Any
portion of the org chart. You know, there's informal leadership. And tonight, I think what you are thinking about, Steve, and in wanting to share with your listeners, is certainly practical tips for how to develop people with that title. But just for some food for thought, I'd like to offer to the group, well, let's also think how we can develop some other folks in our organization so that they don't have to be sheep, or that the people who don't want to be sheep can contribute even if they don't have the leadership title.
Yeah, great point. Let me just pause, do a quick reset here. HR Happy Hour, the leadership show, our guests are Jennifer Miller and Amanda Wendling. The call-in number is 646-378-1086. If you want to come on and ask a question or make a comment, go ahead and press 1. Guys, we have a couple callers who want to jump in right now. So I think, Shauna, what do you think? You want to take a couple calls right now?
And oh, of course.
See where that goes? All right, let's do it. This is always, Amanda, you're new to the show. This is always a bit of a crapshoot, but we'll see what happens.
I love a game. Pick me.
Area code 781. You are on the HR Happy Hour.
Good evening. This is Deb Exo. A crapshoot? Wow.
I know, that was terrible.
It sort of took me aback there for a minute. Friend of Jennifer's. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, and you are
Hi,
absolutely not a crapshoot, Deb. Hello, are you calling from Boston?
I am calling from Boston. I just want to build on what Jennifer had to say, because I think, for me, leadership is more complex today than it was maybe even 10 years ago. When you think of my experience over the last decade, so much has happened, and leaders have been required to do things that I don't think they were required to do 20 years ago. And,
like what, Deb?
Well, I'm thinking about very compressed business cycle times. Used to be you could do great planning, scenario planning, and it might be a 5-year plan, an 8-year plan. Now, anything that has a 2-year on it seems almost silly, because what's going to happen in 2 years? Best guess, right? And it could be significantly different than what the formal plans have laid out. So how does a leader respond to that? How do they plan? How do they respond to that significant shift in the moment? And all of these new entrants into their industry, particularly from a global perspective, China coming into the market, India coming into the market, outsourcing. Who ever heard of outsourcing in 1980? How does a leader think through all those things? So those are just a few examples from my perspective. Leadership is a lot more complex.
Right.
I would also say that more than ever, particularly now with the slow growth the minus growth we saw in the last year and the slow growth that we're projected to experience, the opportunity for leadership, because organizations have really tightened their budgets and they have flattened their organizations, the opportunity to grow leadership is almost so small that you have many applicants, many potentials, but few opportunities. So,
yeah, it's crazy, right? So the world's getting more complex. There's more competition.
Right.
There's smaller staffs. And yet at the same time, organizations might be cutting budgets, resources, and efforts to actually develop leaders that they might need to survive. It seems like it almost seems like a weird sort of self-perpetuating cycle of gloom, right? I mean, like, why would an organization – does that make sense at all?
I don't know if
I mean
– No, I don't know if it's gloom. I just think that many of the models that we've created that were well-researched and very valuable for many years, I don't think they fit anymore. For leadership and competencies, just as soon as you train people around specific leadership competencies that have been identified for your organization, they become threshold competencies, and all of a sudden they need a new set, like within 2 years.
Right.
So, I think it just speaks to the complexity.
Yeah, I think you're right, Deb. Deb, thanks for the call. Hang on with us as long as you like. I want to take our other caller who wants to jump on and get into the mix. It's, man, I'm getting into a ton of trouble tonight.
You're kind of punchy.
It's ridiculous. You know, I took a week off and I came back all fired up. It's crazy. I need to.
Really?
Hi, area code 503. You are on the HR Happy Hour.
Steve, what's up? This is Lance.
Lance, my friend, Portland, represent.
That's right. That's right. Representing.
<Wow.
laughs> Hey, Jennifer and Amanda, how are you?
Good, Lance.
Well,
good to hear from you.
Yeah. So just a question from my personal experience. I had an executive team come up to me and say they wanted to start this leadership development program for our company. And, of course, they didn't want to assign a very big budget. They didn't want to bring anybody from the outside. They didn't want to bring course materials in. For people that are approaching that, especially in this sort of economy, what kind of advice, like as far as a starting point, would you – and my response to that was to bulk the entire thing, so I'm sure that doesn't work for everybody, but maybe kind of your ideas as far as how does somebody start off with basically nothing and whenever it's a demand from the top basically to start one of these types of programs.
Yeah, this is Amanda. I'll start this one, and I'll pass it off to Jennifer, tag team it. I'd say, first of all, you've got to figure out what their outcomes are. What do they want? What do they want to happen? What is it that they're looking for with regard to the change in their leadership? Once you figure that out, you can start to work backwards, and you start to figure out, okay, to get to this, these are the things we need to do. If the change that they want is they want people to take more initiative, they want their leaders to be more catalyst-like in their behavior. They want them to take more risk. They want them to understand more global strategy within the company. Then you have to start looking at those first, and then you start to work backwards. How do we build those? And unfortunately, budget, you could go out and call any vendor, in the book or online, but if you've got budget constraints, you're going to have to start digging yourself. You start looking at, okay, how do I fix this lack of initiative? What are some ways that I can get folks to understand what it's about, and how can I begin to give them experiences in it? And you just start chipping away at it. We're charged with that right now. Our company is telling us every day, you've got all these vendor programs going on. Figure out how to do it with no money and figure out how to make it scalable and inexpensive. Inexpensive in their mind means free. So, you start really looking to, number one, what's the outcome? Number two, how do we get there? And what can we do that involves experiential learning to get them dug into what it is that they're learning, not simply reading about it, not simply sitting in a class, but experiential. So that's start. Jennifer.
Lance, was the core of the question, how can we do this on the cheap?
Well, it is sort of like that. I mean, it's a question of how do you approach it. I mean, not even necessarily, if cheap isn't even the right answer, I want to know what you would suggest the response be for the HR leader and organization that is asked to basically make something for nothing.
Yeah.
Right, build something out of nothing with no resources and maybe not even that much support.
Okay.
Right, which is, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, a couple of suggestions. And one, this is a good time to hop in and say that in preparation for this show tonight, I created a blog post where I pulled together all sorts of resources that are online for free. So if you Google Jennifer Miller and the People Equation, that should pop you into my blog at jennifervmiller.com. So, and there is actually, I lead off with a post written by Dan McCarthy from At Great Leadership, who talks about how to create leadership development on a budget, not for free. But I think that, and I'm following some tweets right now on the hashtag, and I'm seeing, you know, some people say you can't even train leadership, which, you know, that could take us all in a whole different direction. But
oh, those crazy Twitter people, don't pay
attention
to them.
I know.
rabble rousers.
But
hey.
I do want to answer Lance's question, and that is, so let's just say, let's take the scenario where you're an HR leader and someone comes to you and says, you know, we need to develop some leadership capability around here. How do we do that? And by the way, there's really not much money and we can't really give you a lot of time to teach you how to do that. How are you going to do it? You know, I think sometimes we make it more complex than it needs to be. To Amanda's point about experiential, you know, I think there's some really great resources out there where it's not so much teaching people but giving them something to talk about so that they come together. For example, if you say to them, you know, go out and find three blog articles that you either really agree with or disagree with around the topic of leadership, and at the next department meeting we're gonna talk about it and we're gonna create some conversation around it and then even possibly some action planning. So I think that while large companies have the scalability because they have the churn and the turn and X number of new hires or new leaders cycling through the company every year, that they can create more formal systems. I think smaller company, you know, this is one place where size does matter, okay? When we're, you know, when we're talking about what...
Oh, no, that's... I don't want to... I'm sorry to interrupt. I know that's going to get the wrong way.
You're trying to...
Size does matter, you know, on the hashtag, so.
I just wanted to make sure. I don't want you to be the only person who gets in trouble tonight, Steve.
Yeah. Good.
So as it relates to deciding what kind of a leadership intervention to create, you know, if you're a small company, that has its own challenges, and if you're a large company, so small companies, as Lance is pointing out, very limited budget, but they also have tremendous flexibility and the ability to execute immediately. You know, if it's a 100-person company,
yeah,
and the person at the head of the organization says, you know what, we need to take some action on this. We're going to start next Monday. They start next Monday.
Right. I do want to let's just do a quick pause for a second. Again, HR Happy Hour, the Leadership Show. Our guest Jennifer Miller, Amanda Wendling, Lance is on the line. Deb Exo is on the line. Guys, hang out with us as long as you care to, and chime in if you'd like to. The call-in number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on the air and ask a question or leave a comment. We're halfway through the show already. It's ridiculous. I mean,
yeah, the good shows always go by so fast.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So
good time.
I want to get into another topic that we had talked about before the show, Jennifer and Amanda, which was how does an organization, an HR organization, or just, you know, an organization in general go about identifying leaders, finding them? I mean, do they look a certain way? Do they act a certain way? Do they drive the right kind of car? Do they have the, you know, are they tall? You know, I mean, how does an organization go about identifying? I'm serious. Tall people, generally, if two people walk into a room, right, and one's really tall and sort of commanding and the other one's kind of short, right, everybody, you look at the tall person and say, wow, that person knows what they're talking about, right? It's true. So
yeah.
how do organizations go about the process of identifying, you know, potential leaders and future leaders?
Amanda, you want to grab
that? Sure, absolutely. I actually have a very recent example. I just returned from Kansas City last evening, and I was there doing a new hire program that we're launching throughout our organization. And there was a group of 10 people in there, And, you know, you kind of start to pay attention to who's chiming in every time you ask a question, who volunteers to read the card if you're throwing one out there, you know, who steps up when you say, you know, pick a leader from your group to share the information. And there was one gentleman that was just kind of sitting back, you know, being quiet. He was making great eye contact with me throughout the day. And toward the end of the day, we do that old standard, you know, you tape off the floor and you give them a maze and they walk through the maze. And the trail through the maze forced them to go outside of the box. And this guy who's been playing inside the box, keeping his toys in the sandbox all day long, he's the guy who steps out. He doesn't look like he's the guy who's going to step out. He's never made any move throughout the day that says he's the bold one. He's going to step out. But he's just bold enough in his own, you know, self-worth, self-value that he says, you know what, everybody else has tried everything else. I'm stepping out. And, of course, he gets rewarded because, yeah, they get the buzz and they go forward. And I thought to myself, you know, I made some assumptions about this guy, about what kind of participant he was being. You know, like I said, a great eye contact, that kind of thing. But it was a really good cue to me to remember leaders are not the loudest person entering the room. They're not the person who is making the most noise. They're the person who takes action, regardless of title, regardless of position, regardless of you know, what they're looking like or where they're hanging out. They take action. And I think you just watch for people to do that. And when you start to see them do that, you start to pay more attention and you start to give them more opportunity to step out.
So a lot, Amanda, how much of it would you say is based on sort of past demonstrated performance versus, say, I don't know, they came through the right schools, went through the right programs, have the right sort of pedigree?
I don't think that matters. I think it's more emotional intelligence than it is pedigree. You know, there's studies out there that say, I'm reading this book, Emotional Intelligence 2.0, right now, reading it. And there's lots of statistics.
Reading it right now while you're on the show?
Well, okay.
Don't
I'm really
a little literal there.
No.
Come on, buddy.
Okay, I put it down, Joe. No, but I agree. There are people who you look at and you say, God, that guy's going to go far. And you go to the 20-year reunion, and that's the guy who's, you know, pushing a broom, unhappy about his life. Not that saying pushing a broom isn't worthy work. It is, but the guy's miserably unhappy and, you know, not successful in any definition of the word. And I think you don't have to look at pedigree. You don't have to look at schooling. You don't have to look at anything that's outward. And the only thing that appears outward that you need to pay attention, I think that you need to pay attention to, is action. That, to me, says leader. And it's in everything. It's, you know, do you reach your hand out first and say hello to somebody, or do you take action and pick the trash off the floor? I mean, it's that kind of thing, too. So I don't think it has anything to do with pedigree or training experience.
So
I think you can see the behavior happen, but...
Yeah, I think that there's probably a lot of folks wondering why, you know, they're spending a lot of money on certain programs in schools and degrees and stuff, right? I mean that stuff's important, but as Amanda, you're saying, it's not really the key. It's not really the essential element, right? That a leader. Can a leader come from? Can anyone be a leader? I'll ask a question that way. Can anyone just develop into a leader?
I think they can.
I think it depends on what your definition of leader is. I'm seeing a lot of the tweets are flying, I'll tell you what. And again, we could spend a whole lot of time debating, are leaders born or made? Are leaders born or made? And here's what I say about that, because I think, Steve, that's what you're asking, right?
I am asking, because I certainly don't know.
Here's what I say. I say people come into this world with their own unique package, right? They come into this world with who they are. And do some of them have a predisposition to be able to lead? You bet they do. But I've seen just as many people who have developed skill along the way who become great leaders. And I think that we're, you know, again, are we holding fast to some bizarre, old, outdated archetype of what a leader is? Is a leader the person who's, you know, trailblazing and macho and you know, all that crap, you know?
Does it have to be macho?
Right. Well, you know, I wasn't born with that set of instructions, So if that's the frame of reference that one uses, then Jennifer Miller will never be a leader.
Right.
So I think, you know, again, we just need to broaden the definition of what is a leader. Are we talking about people who get things done and have people following them who feel good about taking positive action? That's a pretty broad definition of leadership. If we're talking about a title, if we're talking about celebrity status of being the next Steve Jobs, well, that's a whole different thing.
The next Steve Bowes? No, that's easy too.
Ooh.
That's a low bar, Jennifer. Let's not set the
bar
that low.
Stop it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, Jennifer, great point. We have another caller I want to bring up, and as Jennifer mentioned, there's lots of comments on Twitter, lots of interesting observations. I can't really follow them all. And people are sending me direct messages. It's very unlikely I'm going to look at them during the show. So,
what about mine?
Oh, wait a minute.
Mine are important.
Shauna, you sent me one. Come on, Shauna.
I know. That's why I said mine are important.
Yeah, all right. I'll look at that one. Let's take line 12. Area code 847. You are on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey guys, Jason Seiden.
Hey, Jason.
Glad to be part
of
the discussion.
Jason, thanks for
calling
in.
Can you, please explain this? I need a smart person to explain all this to me because I'm confused.
let me see if I can get one for you, and I'll find that person, bring them on. you guys are going to be surprised that I probably have a bit of a contrarian view on leadership, but I tend to be a little bit old school. I tend to think we still carry an old archetype of leaders in our brain, and the answer is yes. You know, even though a lot of people can do the job, and frankly, I think when you get into a position in today's world, women make better leaders than men, and we can get back to that in a minute. When it comes to...
Yeah, we're definitely coming back to that.
Yeah.
I want to come back to that.
Oh, yeah, we're still coming back to that.
When it comes to selecting leaders, we still, somewhere in our psyche, we respond very positively to that Julius Caesar archetype, that Roman gladiator archetype. And when push comes to shove, that's the thing we're going to get behind. We're going to get behind the guy with the broad shoulders and the full head of hair and who's tall and who sounds leader-like.
I told you, Shauna, the tall guy walks into the room and he gets the response.
Okay. So you know what? In today's world, now, I don't think that person is necessarily the best person to do the job, but I think if you don't look like that, if you want to be a leader moving forward, your first job, your very first job in the 21st century as a leader is to start helping people change their minds and start using your leadership skills to change the archetype that people hold in their heads about what a leader truly looks like. Because until that new form of leader is accepted, then what's the point? You may be the best leader in the world, but if the group doesn't accept you, then you're a leader with no followers.
Bingo.
Now, really Jason, I agree. I'm not letting you off the hook, though. I agree with everything you said, but now I want to circle back to one of your earlier comments was, why are women better at this than men? What's that all about?
So, and this is, there's a lot of studies here, and there's a lot of information on this, and what I'm about to say is anecdotal. There is stuff to back this up. There's also stuff to refute it. It's just it's a combination of a lot of things, including my interpretation of what I've seen, what I've read, what I've experienced. I think we're out of space. And I think what men are really good at is expansion. We are hunters. We're good at the manifest destiny thing. We're good at staking a claim and looking at, you know, just raw earth and turning it into something new. We get hung up when it becomes an interpersonal game and it becomes politics, when the world gets crowded and we can't just take our ball and go home or go to a new space and you know, set up a new fence, we're out of our league. Women are, and I'm using broad stereotypes here, women are a little bit better at the politics, at working in a crowded environment and saying, okay, you know what, we're out of space. We have to figure out how to get along here. That's a skill that I think women have, generally speaking, better than men. And I think that's where we are. The world is crowded. Markets are crowded. I mean, physically, we're crowded. You know, you can't, I mean, it's illegal, but, like, you just can't throw a punch and then go to the next town, you know, ride, you know, hop on your horse and ride to the next saloon. That doesn't exist anymore. We are we've run out of space. You have to stay where you are. You have to live with your mistakes long term. And men are still learning how to do that. Women are better at it. So in corporate America, where it's a political skill set, it's very much that feminine ability to. I'm using this as a broad general. I get that, but it's a
yeah.
Skill
you're not being attacked too much right now by the people listening, so you're fine. So go ahead.
Look, I'm making generalizations about women, right? But on the other hand, getting the job, men send the signals that make them more selectable into the position, even though once in the position, it's the women who tend to have a better natural skill set.
So Jason, it's Jennifer talking. Born or created? Leaders.
I think we're all born with a range of ability, and you can maximize your potential within that range, but you know, tigers don't change their stripes. You kind of are what you are.
So going back to, so are you and I in alignment on you're born with your own set of goods, and that's where you start with? That's what you start with, but you can develop those set of goods?
Yeah, this is my own. I think there's probably a force akin to like, or there's something. There's an intelligence, or there's a force like gravity or something that would explain things like charisma and leadership and interpersonal astuteness. And we haven't figured out what it is yet, so we can't measure it, and all we can do is sort of talk about it. It's kind of like, you know, rewind the clock 20 years. People knew that blueberries were healthy, but we didn't know what antioxidants were. So, you know, we couldn't really explain why they were healthy for you. We just kind of knew that they were. We know that there's this thing called leadership. We don't know exactly what it is or what defines it. So we can talk about it, but I have a feeling there's something there, and we'll find it's like IQ. You know, somebody's born with an IQ, you got what you got. Now, you may not make the most of it. Environmental factors may impact how close you get to your potential, but that potential was set when you were born. If you don't like it, you can blame your parents, you can blame God, but that's about as far as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jason, does the inability to sort of, or the difficulty in sort of recognizing it, or let me ask it this way, is it difficult for organizations to recognize that trait, if that's true, right? If there's really this sort of innate trait or this sort of capacity for leadership in people, and some people have it and some people don't, how challenging is it for organizations to find that, you know, in their workforce and try to cultivate that?
Very. I think there's two things that impact how well a company does or an organization does it at identifying and cultivating talent. The first thing is, how capable are the leaders at the top of the organization? I am a believer that within certain reasons, it takes talent to see talent. The second thing is, how confident are those people? Just because you're good doesn't mean that you're excited to go, you know, recruit and bring up the next generation of talent. I mean, you are replacing yourself, and not everybody has the self-confidence to be able to do that. So, you know, good luck finding an organization of a few dozen, few hundred, few thousand people where everybody at the top is both capable and confident enough to go do this. More likely than not, you're going to have a mix of people, and the people who either are not strong or not confident in their positions, there's going to be some self-sabotage. You know, it gets messy quickly. So, you know, when an organization has that, and then they try to install one methodology for bringing leaders through the group, now the question becomes, which camp owns the methodology? Is it the competent, self-confident people? Is it the other people? Or is it some mix thereof? And the organization's ability to cultivate leaders, recruit them, cultivate them, grow them, is really going to be a function of now who owns that, you know, who owns that choke point of defining the methodology. So I think it's very difficult. And, you know, this is the issue. I think organizations know what to do. I think people understand kind of intuitively what they're looking for, and even if they're going after the wrong archetype, you know, if we say have an archetype, the challenge is actually implementing it. You got all these different kinds of people with their parochial interests all fighting for control of the process.
Right. Everybody sort of knows what to do. Everybody knows what the right thing is to do, but yet no one really wants to do it, right? You want to protect your turf. You want to sort of circle the wagons around your own area, whatever the case may be. You don't actually want to sort of enact those policies, procedures, development programs that you know for a fact that you need to do. It's strange.
Yeah. When it comes to leadership, I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and says, hey, I'm the monkey wrench. Today, I'm going to work. I'm going to sabotage everybody. We get there. We know what we want. But then when push comes to shove, we say, I'm trying to do the right thing, but, you know, I don't necessarily trust that the other guy's going to try and do the right thing, so I better get mine before they get theirs.
Yeah.
And that's where leadership gets tricky.
Jason, hang on the line with us. We have 15 more minutes to go on the show. Call in number 646-378-1086. We have time for a couple more calls. If you're hanging out on the line and want to get in on the conversation, go ahead and press 1, or you want to jump in now, that's fine as well. This is the Leadership Show. Our guest, Jennifer Miller, Amanda Wendling. We have Lance is on the line. Deb Exo, I think, is still on the line. Of course, Jason Seiden on the line, stirring up gender conflict across the Twitterverse, which is cool. I like that. I like a controversial
very
comment
cool.
or quote every show.
I don't understand what the controversy is. He's saying women are better leaders. I don't get what the
So
you're a problem with that?
Yeah.
I think I understand why there might be some controversy with that.
I'm just troubled. I'm troubled by the, you know, the good head of hair comment. That set me back a little bit. Knocked me off.
That's trending pretty heavily on Twitter right now, yeah.
I know. That knocked me off my game a little bit, which stinks. I mean, wasn't Eisenhower a great leader? Don't we remember him fondly as a great leader? No.
Yeah, except they make all the movies about Patton.
Yeah, right.
But what was his hair like? He always had his hat on.
He had a helmet on, and he had pistols with ivory handle. I mean, that's that Roman gladiator, just larger than life, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, we got another caller who wants to jump in, so let's bring that caller on, and let's go to the best HR city in the world, area code 513. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, Steve. It's Steve Brown.
Steve,
hey.
How are you?
Good. I was just wondering, when I see all the tweets and everything, everybody's trying to look for the silver bullet of leadership.
Yeah.
Can't leadership be different in different organizations based on culture? And why is HR against this instead of trying to really take hold of it? I think it differentiates us as a profession. We can really change it.
Steve, that's a great point.
I'll tell you why it's a great point. That actually Jennifer will attest to this, I hope. This was in my show notes. It's one of the questions I wanted to ask tonight, which was, is leadership, the capacity for leadership skills, are they translatable across organizations, or are they unique to organizations and cultures? And sort of I wanted to get the panel sort of comments on you know, can a great leader be successful anywhere, or are there really specific or unique situations at their own organizations that really need to be taken into account?
Can I jump in on that? It's Jennifer.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, first of all, Steve, hi. It's nice to hear your voice. I've been following you on Twitter for quite some time. Hello.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hello. you're right. We did, Steve Bowes, you and I did have this conversation earlier about, is it translatable? And certainly there are skills that are translatable. I'd like to share with you two very brief stories about leadership and culture. First is a client that I worked with many, many years ago. And to Jason's point, you know, I think they were definitely the archetype of very ultra-competitive, macho, hard-charging. And their leadership development process was a grueling grind of a boot camp sort of format. And mm-hmm. so one of the things they did was a week-long training program. There was tests at the end of every day. Your test scores were posted. And at the end of the week, when the entire class graduated, you walked across the stage according to who was first in class, second, and so on, mm-hmm. and the person at the bottom of the class was awarded the Dragon Ass Award. And they dragged on a chain a plaster butt. That's what they got to do. Now, how
nice.
Would you like to work for that company? Okay.
Would hate it.
Whose stock prices continue to rise, I might add. Now, contrast that with another company, a small organization, was a startup firm, a small manufacturer, grew to, by the time I started to engage with them, about 125 employees. Well, they got to create the company from the ground up, and they had decided that one of their core values was going to be diversity. Well, the kinds of leadership behaviors that we worked on together and that they espoused obviously was very different from this first company that I just highlighted. So I think there are leadership traits that, sure, are a red thread that go no matter where you are, but culture absolutely influences what kind of leader will be successful within within that cultural environment.
That's great. Thanks for that.
Steve, thanks so much for the call. Quickly, we probably have time for another call or two. So again, 646-378-1086. This has been a really lively conversation. Lots of tweets.
Yeah.
Sean, I'm probably more than I can remember seeing in several shows. I think this is interesting about leadership is that there's so many sort of, I saw one tweet, I think Lance, it might have even been you, talked about all the sort of divergent theories and different approaches to leadership, and it's crazy, right? I mean, everybody's got their opinion on this.
It's a hot topic.
Absolutely.
Shauna, you were on the front lines of HR, right? I mean, how much of the issues that ran by your desk, you know, employee relations type issues, policy problems, you know, all the drama that you'd see in the front lines of how much of that in your sort of mind did you ever think could have been solved by, boy, if we just had better sort of leadership and better managerial, you know, capacity here that I wouldn't be dealing with all this crap. Did you ever think
well,
that?
Probably the biggest thing that I've seen is questions around who should we develop as a leader and people feeling threatened by these potential leaders. I know in one company I worked at, some of the management was pretty much afraid to even have, like, some of the team leads be developed as leaders because they were threatened by it. And I found that to be just absurd. Why would you want to shoot yourself in the foot like that because you're afraid that someone's going to come along and do a better job than you? Why are you even in a leadership position then if you can't handle it?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good observation, great point. Jennifer, Amanda, I'm going to throw this one out to you guys. Sort of, you know, we're getting down to about just under 10 minutes to go in the show. I'll throw this out there, maybe frame this question slightly differently. Let's just say, you know, I want to be a leader. You know, I want to develop, you know, I want to become a captain of industry. I want to be a leader. I want to rise up the chain. What would you recommend to somebody like me? You know, sort of the metaphorical me. You know, not me personally because, you know, I've got it all, you know, very well put together, so I don't really need a lot of help. But, you know, sort of
like you have a friend who needs this help.
Yeah, my friend who's, you know, maybe not a little follically challenged, a little short, you know, perhaps.
Amanda, go.
Follically challenged.
How do we help
that
person?
My first advice, 1-800, the hair club for men. after that.
All a conspiracy.
I know it.
Oh.
Big.
Hey, you put yourself out there. I could not resist. I think what you have to start with is you have to start with what do you know about the goal or the prize, if you will, at your company. And I don't mean prize as in success, but what's the goal of your company? What's the objective that they're reaching for? You got to know that, regardless of company, regardless of industry. In order to succeed, you have to contribute to the success, I think, contribute to the success of that company, to succeed in that company, to lead in that company. You have to be taking your followers to the same place where the company wants them to go, where the company needs to go to be successful. So I think that's one of the first things you need to do is figure out your company, know your company, and start contributing to those objectives, to those strategies, to those goals. That's one thing I'd say to start with. What do you think?
Okay. Jennifer, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I think that keep in mind, again, that you can learn as much from bad leaders as you can good leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And in the training and development world, we call that non-examples. You know,
mm-hmm.
I genuinely believe that I have never had a bad boss from the standpoint that I have learned from all of them. I've actually had very, very, very wonderful direct supervisors, some better than others, but I would if you truly had a person who said, look, I want to develop my leadership capability, I would say to them, the first thing is go hang out with all the leaders you possibly can and find out from them what makes, you know, what will fit with who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And learn from people who are screwing up, too, because they can provide
mm-hmm.
some great examples.
Yeah,
totally agree.
It could be easier to find the latter example maybe than the former, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So then you can say to yourself, you know what? When I get to that position of influence, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Almost as powerful as the good example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Good point.
Okay. Great. So we got about 5 minutes left in the show. I think it's probably a good idea, Shauna, to kind of take us down, wrap it up a little bit. Let's circle back on some of the more controversial sort of comments and statements and interesting things we learned tonight. Women are better suited at this than men. You know, has a lot to do with it. And Jason agreed with me on sort of that Julius Caesar gladiator archetype thing going on. There's perhaps some innate qualities or capabilities in people that predispose them to leadership potential, which I think which I'm not sure if I agree with or disagree with, but I thought was fascinating, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, this is a really interesting topic, and I guess it's good for folks like Jennifer and Amanda and Jason to some extent I think it's a hard topic to get your hands around to some extent. I mean, it does seem, it's not really that sort of cut and dry, right? I mean,
well, that's why we'll still be talking about it in another 20 years if I live that long. Yeah.
Another 2,000 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously, though.
Well,
Jennifer,
you said something earlier in the show, when I sort of framed the question of why is it so hard? Why are we talking about this so much? And you talked about, it's organizations really dealing with the most complex thing of all, human beings. And I certainly, it's a theme I've thought about a lot. Is if we had more robots in the workforce and less humans, that. I'm not even kidding, that management gets a lot easier, right? And so I think that's certainly that's something we can consider going forward, right?
Well, just show number 35,
that's
or
right.
36.
Well, and I'm, if I can riff on that just for a quick second, I know you're trying to wrap it down, but to final comment that I'll offer.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Seth Godin just wrote Linchpin, and he says people are robots right now.
Really?
So go read it. Linchpin, Seth Godin.
Yeah, okay.
Check it out.
Well, yeah. But Jennifer, thanks so much. Any other final thoughts you want to give us? Any comments? Places you'll be, events you're doing, things you want to sort of plug, comment, mention before we wrap up the show?
Well, I would just invite anybody who didn't get a chance to either didn't want to or couldn't call in tonight. I see there's very lively traffic, and put whatever you got to say on the people equation. I would love to continue the conversation, and I did post some links for folks who want something a little bit more tangible and specific about leadership on my blog. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, Jennifer, thanks so much. That's thepeopleequation.com. Do I have that right?
JenniferVMiller.com.
JenniferVMiller.com. Okay, JenniferVMiller.com.
Yep.
Check that out. Okay, Amanda, any final thoughts, comments, mentions, anything you want to share? Honestly, Amanda, it's really just us talking right now. No one's really listening.
Well, I know. Like I said, this information to be dangerous, but love that you've reached out and allowed me to share some of my ramblings, and appreciate that I'm involved. It's a great topic.
Well,
it's going to continue to get more and more diverse, more and more complex. So continuing the dialogue helps at least somebody with it. So.
Amanda, thanks so much for joining us and
You're
being
welcome.
Good sport tonight. Great.
You bet.
All right, we got about 90 seconds to go. Jason Seiden, anything you want to mention?
Great topic. We got to keep talking about it. Even if people are robots, we have more robots in the work today, leadership's no easier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Thanks, Jason. Lance Hahn.
No, great topic. Hopefully we can continue to kind of evolve it as we get deeper into the topic.
Great. Well, guys, thanks so much for participating. Deb, are you still with us?
I am.
Deb, any final thoughts from you?
No, I just concur with everyone. Yeah, we have
You're
to
beaten
talk.
In?
What?
You're beaten into submission? No more? No more
I
comments?
Am. No. The comment about tall people, you got to be careful. I'm a tall person.
great. Well, thanks so much. everyone, Jennifer, Amanda, Jason, Lance, Deb, Steve, Brown, thanks so much for calling in. Thanks for everybody listening. Next week, we're winding it down. I'm trying to get us out of here on time, Shauna. 30 seconds to go. Next week, we're doing compensation. We're talking all things comp, incentive, pay, money show next week, right on the Venture Happy Hour. It should be a lot of fun. So thanks so much, everyone. It's great to be great. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on Venture Happy Hour.
Yeah.
Good night, everyone.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.